The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You are in The Huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, all unaccounted for. Brady's here, Rich is here, Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
So one of the guys at Muscle Beach, when you interrupt their routine, the workout routine with, ah, in the middle of it, do they look at you funny or what happens?
They throw weights at me is what they do.
A couple of dumbbells and a dumbbell.
Yeah, just they just give it, thank and you. I try to throw them back, but I can't, thank you.
I'm here all week.
I try to throw them back, but I can't lift them. So I'm like, someone help me pick this up. I can't get it off the court. Hey, real quick, I'll tell you this. Maybe one of our listeners could help me because Brady won't help me. And I was playing basketball yesterday in Venice.
No way.
And I was playing with a former NFL player who, by the way, looked like he was 40, but he was 59. And he played with the Vikings and with the Saints. And he was this Hawaiian dude. His name was Tao, but I'm sure it was short for something else. And that's all I got with his name. I never asked him the other part of his name. Can somebody Google that or match
Tao?
That or something like that?
T-A-O?
Well, I'm sure it's short for something, I'm pretty sure. But how many people do you know played for the Vikings and the Saints and is 59 years old? It shouldn't be that hard to figure out now, should
well,
it, or
see.
What?
You got a Mante Tao, but he's certainly not 59.
Yes. No, it's like when you write power play, can't you just put played for the Saints and Vikings and see how many people come up? I mean, you can't be too many people, right?
Well, I don't think that you gave us enough because I'm trying to find it here.
Well, anyway, he was 59. He looked like he was 39,
yeah.
Which I was thoroughly embarrassed.
So I assume the outcome was not pleasant for you.
No, it wasn't pleasant. He was a good player, too. I mean, he was in shape. Usually former NFL players let themselves go. And are like marshmallows, so I was surprised about that. But it's raining here, actually. It's like 55, 60 degrees and
nice.
Raining, and I had to put on sweats and a sweatshirt because I'm very cold. I'm very
good.
Chilly.
You
good.
Brought sweatpants and sweatshirts to Los Angeles?
Yes.
How funny is that? You get nothing but sunshine. We get one sunny day, it's kind of sunny today. It's just warmer, so it feels better, and it's raining where you are. That's hilarious.
Yeah. And we're going to have 80 degrees on Thursday for the rest of the time I'm here, though. So don't feel
it's going to be 80 tomorrow here.
Wow, look at you guys.
Yeah, you could have been in a Speedo at North Beach tomorrow.
That is true. I should just walk up down church. And why do you do that? Why do you have to make that noise when I say that?
Just because you put the image into your brain, and it's disturbing, obviously.
Hey, Brady, I don't know if you could do this. But this would be hysterical. When Tom Caron comes on the show today, as intro music, can you get music from his son's band and see if he recognizes the music or anything like that?
Wonder if that exists.
Can you imagine?
I could work on
what?
It.
Can you imagine him saying, "What the hell is that music? What kind of intro music is that?"
And then say, "That's your son."
Yeah, that's your son.
What are they called again?
His son was great, by the way, you said, over at the Burger Bar.
Yeah, I hear it was great. And I'll be there tonight.
Yeah,
we're
going to be at the Burger Bar tonight, Arnie, without you.
Yeah, trivia tonight.
And your wife's made the question. She really dumbed him down, as you like to say.
Oh, no. I hate when people get like 7 or 8 out of 8. I hate when that happens.
Well, I don't think that ever happens, does it?
Not
sometimes.
Often.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well,
no,
when everybody complains.
As we used to say in rock and roll radio, though, it's a no-repeat Tuesday. She just came in, and she was all excited. You'd think she just won the lottery. She goes, "Not a single one of the questions tonight has been asked in the first month at Burger Parts." Okay. What
no
an accomplishment.
Recycling. Yes, no recycling. All right, busy show. Lots the heck is going on. You better use that Town Fair Tire text line like we're giving away $100 bills at 802-655-6672. Matter of fact, you should be using it like we're giving away $100 bills along with gold bricks because that's how much is going on. Brady, tell me what's happening this week, and then let's get right into it.
Well, trivia today, Burger Bar in Colchester, 7:30 to 9:30, and we are expecting a good crowd as we usually get. It's a great mix
yeah.
because because if you're a college student, you're looking to unwind at the end of the semester, at the end of the school year, maybe you're getting ready to graduate, you're welcome to come out. If you're a local, if you're a townsperson, you're looking to get out on the town, it's a great spot to go. Great food. They've got half-price appetizers. They've got great drink specials on Coors, Miller. Blue Moon is only $3. So I know, Rich, a lot of people are coming to take advantage of those great food and drink specials.
Now, are finals done at St. Mike's?
I have no idea.
It's not done.
Okay, because imagine that if they all finished today.
My finals were they ended the 16th of May.
Okay.
All right. But I'll tell you this. The last Friday, Arnie, you'll like this one too. So Oswego has the most bars per square mile of any town in the United States. There are, on the main drag in Oswego, it's called Bridge Street. And there's 34 bars off the, there's 34
wow.
bars.
In that little town?
Along
wow.
Bridge Street.
Wow.
And some of them are right off Bridge Street and some of them are off side streets adjacent to Bridge Street. But nonetheless, so the last Friday of classes, every year, we would do what's called the Bridge Street Run. And you would take they called it the drunk bus. You would take the drunk bus right. or a taxi to the end of Bridge Street, and you would start at the end at the 34th bar, and you would see how many different bars you could go to and have one drink at until you made it back to campus.
Wow.
So, that's a lot of alcohol.
So we would – now, I only got to do it one time in 4 years because I always had baseball every – the coach conveniently scheduled a game on Bridge Street Run Day or Saturday morning, an away game in which we had to leave at 8 a.m. So I only got to participate one time. But Bridge Street Run, you got to see how many of the 34 bars you could make it to.
34.
Jeez.
That reminds me. I saw a thing today about the best place for singles in America. And Burlington, out of 382 towns polled, was 13th.
Really?
Yes.
Get out of here.
I thought I saw that Burlington was a bad place to be single.
No. It's good by me.
Yeah, but I think they're referring to 20-year-old singles.
To people who aren't 100 years old.
So.
Yeah, I don't count because I haven't always been single. But, no, I was just surprised. It was good to see it so high up there. So
I think
Boulder was first. Boston was second.
Yeah.
And Pittsfield, Mass. was fifth.
Don't understand that. A lot of art lovers that love quaint towns or something.
It's not really that great of a town, is it?
Arnie, I think I made it to 16 of those bars, by the way, because a couple of the ones at the end, they didn't like Bridge Street Run, so they kind of shut down early those days because they didn't want to get torn apart.
Gee, it sounds better than streaking through McDonald's like we used to do.
So,
hey, Arnie.
Yes.
Could that guy have been Manu Tuiasosopo?
Is he 50? Yes, it could have been. We called him Tao, so that could have been one of the reasons why his name, I guess he didn't want to say, call me Mr. Tuiasosopo.
Okay, well, because we just had a first-time texter send that one in, and it's that sounds about his age.
I think he had a couple, if Tuiasosopo, I remember, there's one that went to University of Washington.
Yeah, that was Marcus Tuiasosopo.
Yeah,
right.
So they got to be related, then, I'm assuming, otherwise.
Yes,
All right, here it is. Manu Tuiasosopo is 60 years old, and he lives he was born in L.A.
Yeah, there you go.
And he's 6'3".
Yeah,
and he went to UCLA. That. Yeah, you know what? That just might be him.
Did he play for the Saints and Vikings?
That much I can't tell you, but I will in a second.
Marcus Tuiasosopo, Arnie, played at the University of Washington and then played quarterback for the Raiders.
Yes, but he's a lot younger.
Yes,
than
and then
60,
Matt,
yeah.
Matt Tuiasosopo, his brother, played for the Mariners.
Wow! So
and was stunk.
Guy played for the Seattle Seahawks 79-83 and the 49ers 84-86.
Just maybe I got the teams wrong then.
Right.
Maybe I got the teams wrong then. Well, it's got to be the same guy. I mean, how many guys that are 60 played in the NFL for two teams playing out in Venice Beach in L.A.? I got to assume it's named Tuiasosopo.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't think a real common name.
But he was a good guy. He was really a fun guy, and he was a hell of a player too. So, yeah, it's 60 years old. Wow, he looked good. For 60, that was unbelievable. So,
and you don't even look good for 80.
I know that.
Wow.
Remember, mistake of the day, if you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. You want that baseball cap, that 101.3 ESPN exclusive. Well, it's brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. As for what's coming up today, so much stuff, we almost couldn't even fit it all in. Saquon Barkley was on Go Look and Wingo today, so Giant fans will play some of that back. Tom Brady made himself public in a big way yesterday.
Yeah.
The Bruins lost to the Lightning last night. Tom Caron of Nesson at 4:35. Arpan Basu of The Athletic in Montreal. He'll join us at 5:20. And a really cool link between the Montreal Canadiens and UVM that a lot of people don't know about. But first, Arnie, they said you couldn't do it. I said they couldn't do it. Rich said they couldn't do
it.
And the Celtics did it last night. What a performance that was. They take a 1-0 lead on Philadelphia.
Yeah, I said they could do it. You know what's interesting about this? I want to give Boston I said they're going to beat Philadelphia and probably win this in six. I want you to know something. I want to give the Celtics 95% credit. The reason I'm not going to give them 100% credit is because I want to save at least 5% to rip the Philadelphia 76ers because they are the most overrated team right now. To lose by 16 to an undermanned team, I just want to say this. If I was Philadelphia, I've got to get together before the game and say, hey, they've lost their two top players. They've got injuries. They lost Brown. They're having problems, but they're playing good. We go in and we put our foot on their jugular. You don't lose by 16 to a team that, and I know they've been playing good ball, but that is shameful of Philadelphia. But again, I want to give a lot of credit to Boston. That was not a good victory, a great victory. It showed dominance. It showed, hey, if you think you're going to take this series from us, it's going to be a grueling 7-game series. Nothing is going to be easy. Horford is just incredible. I mean, 10 of 12, what? You couldn't go 12 for 12? I mean, it's amazing what that guy's put up. Tatum, I don't even think you're a rookie anymore. If I didn't know better, if I knew nothing about the NBA, I'd swear he was like a 4-year veteran out there. He's just looks phenomenal. And Rozier, I stutter when I talk about him because I don't know what the hell to say. I mean, he was the X factor. We talked about X factors a little bit yesterday when we were change your question, Brady, and he had 29. So what a win for the Celtics. And, you know, you take game two. I think you got this series if you go up 2-0.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the Celtics, they had three players get 25 points plus. You alluded to some of it. Terry Rozier, 29. Jason Tatum, 28. Al Horford, 26. I mean, this is Tatum's 28 were the most by a Celtics rookie in the playoffs since Larry Bird in 1980. So that's rarefied air. Okay. The Celtics get three 25-point scores in a playoff game for the first time since 87 when Mikhail Bird and Robert Parrish did it. So there's some history behind last night. And Rich, we talk about this a lot. When we talk about college sports, I always give this analogy. We talk about UVM. If UVM is going to beat Marquette or UVM is going to beat Purdue or anybody,
right,
you have to get your star. If you want to pull an upset, the formula is pretty simple. You have to have your stars play like stars. That's number one. And the Celtics got the extreme high end, I think, of what all of those three guys are capable of doing. Rozier, Tatum, Horford played about as well offensively as they can play. They hit 17 threes in that game versus just 5 for Philadelphia, so they dominated from beyond the arc. They won the turnover battle as well. Now, usually you've got to win rebounds. The Celtics didn't do that. They got out-rebounded by 9, but they had 3 of the 4 stats that are really, really key.
And it helped that Philadelphia was hideous in that game. 76ers were absolutely awful, but you're right. I'm still going Philly in 6. I'm not budging because you're not allowed to, at least not yet, unless you're Arnie. Well, you're 3,000 miles away. I can say what I want. Just maybe catch you not listening. You're right, Brady. The fact that those guys did what they do best. They made shots. What did Rozier do? He went, 7 for 9 from beyond the arc? And, I mean, he was killing them because every time Philly would get it down to – I mean, they really never were in this game. Especially, I mean, in the second half. And every time they'd get it down to, 8 – and that's about as close as they got it. Rozier would be left wide open. That's Philly's fault as much as Boston's fault. Brady, I mean, they were wide open on almost all of those shots.
Do you agree with Rich that Philadelphia was hideous? I know their three-point shooting was hideous, but Joel Embiid had, 31 points? Yeah. So
he was it, though. That was it.
Well, hey, Simmons had 18, and if you know, he's not going to give you a heck of a lot more, to be honest with you. Maybe he'll give you 25 on a great day, but you can expect him to average about 18 in this series. So, you know, what more are you expecting? Yeah, the three-point shooting was horrible, but Joel Embiid still gave you the 31 there.
Well, but, I mean, the guys we were talking about yesterday, I mean, we knew Embiid was going to bring it. We knew Simmons was going to bring it, although he had 7 turnovers, and that's what I didn't like about his game. He played in a panic most of the night. But guys like Covington, who you've got to get something out of, he had zero field goals in 27 minutes.
And Fultz didn't even play.
Yeah, what's up with that? And they kept showing him on the bench, and he looked like he just lost his puppy or something.
The thing about last night, Arnie, I don't know that it's that the Sixers were horrendous, but what I felt was horrendous was their defensive effort. The thing that Milwaukee got was, I think Milwaukee knew their MO. They knew that they didn't have a ton of scoring outside of Giannis and Middleton. You look at Philadelphia, I think they think that they can just outscore you constantly. And they think that no matter what is happening defensively around them, they're going to be able to put up points. And I think they got a harsh realization yesterday that when you play a better team in the playoffs, it's not that easy. What I do feel like is easy is I think the Celtics are going to have opportunities to score, because I do think the Sixers, as a young team that knows it's offensively centered, I think they're prone to lapses. And nothing more big last night than in the fourth quarter, I think the Celtics were only up by 8, and the Sixers were making a run. And Bead hits a bucket and then loafs down the floor. Smart Smart pushes it. And there's Rozier wide open for a backbreaking three. I think that play was emblematic of the entire night.
Horrible pass on that three, though. I want you to know that. Didn't set him up great. You know, he had to bend down and get it. I hate when that happens. I just want to say something. Why wasn't Fultz emptied off the bench when they cleared the bench? And it was up to a big lead there, because they did clear the bench. They didn't even put him into the game. Did they want him to save face? Did they not want him to pout? I don't understand the rationale of not at least get into the game, work up a sweat, you know, get the nerves out of your system. Say you played the playoff game, and let's get you ready for game two. I don't even understand not putting him into the game at all.
No, I couldn't understand it either. Like you said, I mean, they put Holmes in there. They put Bayless in, all the, you know, the 11 and 12 guys at the end of the bench for the 76ers. But I have no idea. I mean, I had heard late in the regular season that he wasn't adapting well to the NBA, which I mean, what the hell does that mean?
He had a triple-double, like, almost instantly in one of his first games back.
Right. I just heard from, I'd love to say sources, but let's not kid ourselves. I heard from people on this radio station just saying that he was having a lot of trouble with the mental aspect of the NBA.
Well, hey, some people don't like private jets. Some people like to go coach. But I don't know what to tell you.
But you're right, Arnie. I mean, that's a huge red light. I mean, was he injured? Do they not want him to get hurt in his 37 seconds off the bench or whatever in a blowout? That was a very strange move.
I just think it's because they wanted him to save face. And I got to be honest with you, now's not the time to save face. Now's the time to say all hands on deck and let's get ready to see try to get a win in game number two. That's what I'm getting ready for. By the way, Saquon Barkley on with Golic and Wingo today. Some interesting stuff. Also, Yankees had a game with the Astros yesterday. We'll tell you what happened in that. That's all coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The huddle is back. I'm sure you missed us. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. I need to go on a serious diet when I get home. In-N-Out Burger, Chick-fil-A. Yesterday, as I'm driving by, boom, it hit me like a ton of bricks. What's that? It's a Taco Bell. Had to stop at Taco Bell.
Nice.
I've hit every one of your favorite joints, Brady.
How about all the ones that we don't get to have here, like Golden Corral and Carl's Jr. and all that stuff?
Stop with the Golden Corral. I think my next one has to be Cheesecake Factory.
Absolutely.
I just can't go without
that. Oh, my gosh. They got to get one here. You can't tell me there isn't some space on Shelburne Road they can't put on Cheesecake Factory.
How
they got everything
mini
else.
Cheesecake Factory, just something like that. I got to just tell you something. I don't know if you guys know this about Venice Beach and Muscle Beach and all that. It's half tourist, and then you have a lot of, homeless people down there and just kind of shady stores and stuff. And now they're starting to take it over. And guess who's the first store to make it look all nice and upscale? None other than our very own Ben and Jerry. So I thought that was hysterical, because they're starting to redo that, and there's a lot of fight down there. But yeah, it certainly could use a makeover. And I saw the Ben and Jerry's. I'm like, good for you guys getting up there, Venice Beach. I love
instant
it,
upscale for Venice Beach.
No, but it is. I'm being serious. They it looks fantastic. Their store looks great, and a little bit of a Vermont there, and I was loving it. I thought it was fantastic. All right, Saquon Barkley on with Golic and Wingo today, Brady. What's going on there?
Yeah, he had a really great conversation. We'll play back some of it for you now, and then we'll get into our impressions. First off, Saquon Barkley talking about what exactly his role with the Giants might be here in 2018.
Do what the team needs you to do. If it's run the ball 30 times a game, then that's what you got to do. If it's not, if it's run the ball 8 times a game, catch the ball 5 times out of the backfield, and pass block, then that's what you got to do. I'm not really big into numbers. I'm not really big into how many touchdowns you score, because I realized in college that some of my best games were the games I didn't even have a lot of yards.
Arnie, I think that you and I need to move past the idea that the Giants did the wrong thing in picking Saquon Barkley and just now move forward as to that is how it is. Rich is shaking his head like he doesn't believe it. Like, oh, he's been coached really well here. But I take it to be sincere. Everything I've heard Saquon Barkley say echoes that sentiment. Whether you agree with the pick or not, I do think Giant fans are going to have a very easy time rooting for Saquon Barkley, not just because he's good. He says the right things. He appears to act the right way. And look, he's 20 years old or whatever. He just had his first, you know, he just found out that his child born, or he just found out he was having a child. I think his child was just born.
Yeah,
born,
I think so. He is a father. Born, yeah.
So when you talk about a guy then that's not going to be able to get sucked into the New York City lifestyle and has had to mature real quickly, I think all of that point's good for Giant fans too.
I agree with both of you. One, I do think he was coached, because they're all coached. It's part of the process. It should be a class that you take. I talked to my son, screwing around sometimes, pretend like I have a microphone in my hand and ask him a question, and I go, is that the idiotic answer you're going to give the television or the radio station? Because you're going to get booed out of America if you say something that stupid. I mean, I feel like you know, like Nuke LaLoosh, where you have like those three, you know, just say, you know, have three common phrases there. Yeah, he was coached, but he still is sincere about what he said. And yeah, I mean, that's the only attitude you can take. You got to, what is he going to say? No. They've got to give me the ball more than 8 times. I need my carries.
Right.
I need my 20 to 25 carries. You're never going to say something like that. And by the way, you need to catch the ball more, so much out of the backfield than ever if you're running back, or catch those little shovels or anything like that. So I like everything about him. I think he's going to be phenomenal. I just wanted the Giants to get more for that number 2 pick.
Arnie, I do disagree with what you just said there. When you're like,
why?
What's he going to say? I want the ball. I need the ball. No, he's not going to say that. But how often do we hear a rookie come out and say, I want to be a Hall of Fame player? How often do we hear a rookie come out and say, I want to be the best that's ever done it? And he could have taken that approach, and some of us would have appreciated, man, look at his competitive fire. Look how great he wants to be. But you better get your touches if you want to hit those kind of aspirations. Yeah. So that's how you say it without saying it.
If you say something like that, we immediately criticize you. Heck, if your coach says it about you, we'll criticize your coach. Dabo Swinney said it about Deshaun Watson. What did he say? He's going to be better than Michael Jordan. What did we do? We immediately jumped on him like he was cursing four-letter words out there. We're like, what are you, an idiot? And you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. You come out and say something like that, Brady. Even if the coach says it, we jump on him like a ton of bricks there.
Right, and you've got to go with rookie speak, though, when you're in a situation like him. Hell, he got drafted last weekend, and what's he going to say immediately? He's got the New York City media all over him, I'm sure, and they're all very excited. But you've got to go out there and say the old tried and true line is, I'll do whatever helps the team win. I mean, that's
with
the official
God willing,
line.
With God willing, I'll help the team.
But what does help the team win mean? That's the question. That's such a vague answer that they always give. Does that mean you should carry the ball 28 times a game? Or does it mean you should carry it 3 times a game?
What did you want them to say? Hopefully with our 4 wins this year, I'll help win those 4 games. What did you want them to say?
It'd be refreshing.
Barkley continued on about what his goals are for this season and for his career.
Don't want to just be a one-dimensional back. I want to be a complete back, not just a complete back, a complete player. That's what running the ball in between tackles, outside the tackles, catching the ball in the backfield, passing. If I'm a dummy, if it's just a play action and really try to set that play action as best as I can, try to have that presence to have team follow me and open up other things. And then if it's on special teams, whatever the team needs me to do.
You can call me naive if you want, but I find that wholly believable, and I find him incredibly sincere. And I yeah, color me naive if you want to laugh at me, Arnie. But and seeing him on stage with Susie Colbert after getting picked, he just feels like that guy to me. And we had on Tyler Donahue of Land of 10 on Champlain Valley Game Night on Friday. Yesterday, we had Steve Jones, who's the play-by-play guy for Penn State. They all talk about how humble he is. They talk about how much he wants to be a team guy. And then when he starts talking about being diverse in his game and in his skill set, I am very excited if I'm a Giant fan.
Well, I'll give you this. He's not Johnny Manziel making the money signs with his hands. I'll go ahead and give you that. He's certainly not to that extent. Look, maybe he is a humble guy. Yeah, he originally, I think, was born in the Bronx, New York, right?
He was, yep.
Yeah, so I mean, believe me, and that's where I was born. That's where I come from. When you come from there, I mean, usually you have a sense of, you know, like you're a step ahead of everybody else because you had such a bad childhood. But you know, he seems grounded. He seems like a good guy. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Let's see what happens when he gets, because let's see how he reacts to things after maybe a bad couple of games or a fumble here that caused the Giants a game. Then it's not going to be all flowers and candy for the young man. I promise you that.
Right. Now, that's what I was thinking too, especially with that New York media. But right now, he's saying all the right things. He doesn't sound at all like a prima donna. And I just, you know, I think the problems here that are developing, I think, are especially with a number two pick and the Giants continuing to say, we wouldn't have given up anything for him. He was our man. We had him all along. The expectations are going to be super high in the number one media market in this country. But so he comes out there and has a couple of back-to-back, you know, 8 carries for 13-yard games. We're going to start hearing it real fast.
I want you to know something. I'm sorry to jump. I just want you to know one thing. If Baker Mayfield was not taken number one, had it really been Sam Darnold, the Giants would not have gotten, and I know we're going to get to this later on, would not have gotten Saquon Barkley.
Possible.
More than possible, definitely, because then the Patriots would have thrown in everything and said, okay, take our two number ones. Did they have two number twos, Brady?
Yeah,
I don't remember.
Did.
Two number twos, and at that time, they still had their number three before they traded that, right? They traded that later in the day, so they would have said, take two number ones, two number twos, and number three. So, you know, you love them all you want. You probably wouldn't have had them had Sam Darnold gone number one.
Rich, I don't think Barkley is going to be the brunt of the pressure in that media market. I really think he's going to be almost immune from it. Because I think, number one, Eli is going to be the first main focal point of conversation. Is Eli done? How is Eli playing? I think that's the number one thing. And then off of that, I think Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman are the ones squarely in the crosshairs, because if Eli's playing poorly and they passed on the quarterback of the future early, then that's going to fall not on Barkley, who was the pick over the quarterback, but on the guys who picked Barkley over the quarterback. And conversely, if Barkley's playing poorly, then I still think it's going to reflect on Gettleman and Shurmur from the crowd of people saying, this is why you don't take a running back that high. I think Barkley's going to be largely immune from a lot of the pressure.
So much is the way he performs with the press, too. I mean, if he gets out there and says, give me the damn ball, and turns into Keyshawn Johnson right out of the gate like he did, then that could be a problem. But you're right. I mean, at least on the face of things immediately right out of the gate here, it doesn't appear that way. But see where they're at if the Giants are, you know, 4-9 going into game number 14 and Barkley hasn't done anything. I don't think it'll happen immediately, but I think it could be lingering.
How many times do you think Saquon Barkley has been criticized? Radio, television, newspaper? What, zero?
Yeah.
Think about that. High school, never. Penn State, when he had maybe one bad game against Rutgers, they still won that one anyway. So you never criticize anybody at Penn State. So zero there. His first criticism will start coming in the NFL. Let's see how, just like most of them. But though Baker Mayfield certainly has had his share of criticism, Saquon Barkley, not even close. We'll see how he handles criticism like that. Brady, when's the first time you received criticism for your pitching performance, and how did you accept it? I can see you getting all salty about it.
From the Oswego media.
Yeah, exactly.
from my high school coach, who came out to me and said, if you walk one more guy, you're out. And then I walked the next guy. So
Were you out?
I was out.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Sounds like you were
on
last night.
I would have been salty. Wow.
I didn't enjoy that. Hey, Arnie, I will say this before we go to break in a minute and get to Tom Caron. I am so fascinated just at how they're going to use Saquon Barkley, because we've heard about his ability in the kick return game. We've heard about his ability as a pass catcher, both out of the backfield and maybe lining up in the slot or even lining up out wide. Basically, look at what the Panthers did with Christian McCaffrey, and Dave Gettleman's the guy who drafted Christian McCaffrey. Look at the way they used him, And then think about the fact that you've got a much better polished runner than McCaffrey in Barkley. I think you're looking at a very, very exciting Swiss Army knife skill set. I'm fascinated how they're going to use him.
There's just one thing you're missing, and this is the one thing that the Giants need more than ever, is somebody to pick up the blitz.
Yes.
The Patriots are very good at that, to pick up the blitz with Brady, though. Brady's been hit a little bit more in his age than he was younger. Saquon Barkley could pick up the blitz, which isn't really so much, and yes, it is to protect Eli Manning, but it's more so to be able to go downfield to go after like somebody, Odell Beckham Jr. or something, which will stretch those defenses. So that's the difference between completing a pass or not, is picking up that blitz.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Blitz pickup in today's NFL, where we're told that it's pass happy, and some teams are trying to throw back or get throwback and go back to the run. The Seahawks are doing it. The Raiders are trying to do it under John Gruden. But in a pass happy league, your backs have to be able to pick up the blitz. I think you're right about that. So I have to move past my unhappiness with the selection and just be excited if I'm a Giant fan, because I think Saquon Barkley presents a really exciting glimpse of the future.
You want to give me 30 seconds on the Yankees-Astros? I really didn't pay attention tonight. Anything good about that?
The Yankees lost 2-1, and they ended their 9-game win streak. Good news for Yankee fans. Sonny Gray looked okay for the second consecutive time. I've actually got some stuff coming up on Thursday on Champlain Valley Game Night on him, which is pretty fascinating. But that's good. The Yankees need him to be good. And two, is there any more of a resurgence in baseball than Charlie Morton?
I was just about to say, what is that guy eating for breakfast every morning? He was unhittable last night.
Charlie Morton was a cast-off with the Pirates, and then he became famous for copying Roy Halladay's mechanics, and now he's throwing 97 and getting the final outs of the World Series. Unbelievable story.
Oh, that is awesome. All right, coming up next, you love him, you hear him every week. He's our Red Sox and Bruin insider from Nesson. It's Tom Caron next, right here in the Huddle at 101.3 ESPN.
Back to the Huddle, where you can give us your take at 802-655-6672. Providing Arnie shuts up long enough to let you get a sentence in. 101.3 ESPN.
All right, welcome back. You're in the Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Red Sox baseball comes your way 6:25 today after Champlain Valley Game Night, Game 2 of their series with the Royals. Tom Caron calling in here momentarily. Brady and Rich here. Arnie out in L.A. Be honest, how much of the Red Sox did you watch yesterday sandwiched around the Bruins and Celtics?
It was completely based on what commercial break was where. It really was. I mean, I'm surprised the batteries in my remote work at all today. They took a beating last night. Look, Erod goes out there and can't throw a strike in the first inning, and the next thing you know, it's the 7-20 Kansas City Royals, 3-0 before anything even happens. So, but then you start watching the Bruins. They get behind. And they were playing like dog poop last night for most of the game, so they get a little frustrating. But I'll tell you, the Celtics kept me last night. It was all about and that doesn't very often happen, as I've always said over the years of this show. The Celtics are my fourth favorite Boston sports team. You could almost call them 1C, A, B, C, D, I suppose you could call them. But it's almost impossible not to watch them right now, because of what that team is doing with what they have left.
I know, and you mentioned Erod. He's so frustrating at times because yes, he's got the ability to throw 94 on the black with a great changeup, and he's got the ability to go out there and walk the ballpark at times. And when you talk about that Red Sox rotation, all you're hoping for is consistency. We think we know that Sale's going to be great. We think we know that Price is going to be good more often than he's bad. Now, he struggled a little bit his last time out and gave up, I think, 5 earned runs in his last time out. We're starting to believe that Porcello was at least going to be closer to 2016 than he was to 2017.
Yep.
But out of Pomeranz and Erod, you're just looking for consistency. Just, I want to know what you're going to be game to game. On any given night, one of them could go 8 innings and 1 hit, and they could go 3 innings and 8 hits.
Absolutely. That's the thing. I mean, Pomeranz to a point, but the thing about Rodriguez, too, is you wonder if he's going to be that guy with a lousy knee for his entire career. I mean, he's always had, ever since he hurt himself in the bullpen a couple of years ago, seems like he goes about 4 or 5 games, then he hurts his knee, then goes 4 or 5 more a month later, then hurts his knee again, and you just wonder if he's ever going to actually get 33 starts in any given year.
Well, Sox on the field again tonight, 6:25, as we just said, after Champlain Valley game night. Now let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find our Red Sox and Bruins insider from Nesson. It's Tom Karen. TC, how are you?
Good. How are we doing, guys?
We're doing great, and the Red Sox with a win yesterday. And let me start with this. Another grand slam for this team. And what is that, five for April?
Six.
I thought this team did
six.
Six.
I thought they didn't hit home
six.
Runs.
Yep.
Well, their home runs are up. There's no doubt about that. They didn't hit a single grand slam last year, and that's stunning to me. And six before May 1st ties the Major League record set by the Montreal Expos.
Yes.
So they're the only active team to ever do it. So it's pretty remarkable that they, A, you're getting bases loaded a lot. I mean, that speaks to their on-base opportunities. And B, they've got guys delivering. Xander last night, that was a great at-bat. Fouled off a couple and finally got one down the middle and just absolutely turned on it.
They had a couple of at-bats back-to-back where they must have taken about six or seven pitches, fouled off a couple of good pitches, and who was it? I'm trying to think. It was Moreland
before. Right before Bogaerts. Moreland with the bases loaded.
Yes,
Was down 0-2 and wound up walking in a run with the bases loaded to keep moving. That was with two outs. So he draws the walk on a great at-bat, keeps the inning going, and then Bogaerts gets the grand slam and the whole game turns.
And I'll tell you, that ball four was about an inch low. But, hey, before we get...
Oh, I know.
Before we ever get to, you know, any of that sports stuff, let's talk about what really matters. I hear your rock star son just killed it at the burger bar, huh?
You know, the reviews have been good. I heard they even talked about bringing him back in the future. So,
wow.
And the over-under. I took the under on whether he would spend more on drinks than he made playing. and he actually, it was a net positive. He came out ahead, so that's a good night.
TC, I also want you to know that apparently your son is going across the pond at some point this summer for some kind of study abroad thing, and his roommate is is one of our interns, so I've made sure that our intern doesn't corrupt your son.
Wait, what? Does Jack even know this?
That his roommate is our intern? I don't know that he knows this.
I.e. spy?
This is tremendous. If we could avoid Jack knowing this so that I could have direct intel to me...
Yes.
Rather than that would be great. I would help get your intern another internship at NASA or something down the road.
Intern Nathan's going to be pumped to hear that. So I'll take us away from the fun stuff and go back to the Red Sox. The one knock on Alex Cora so far, TC, has been the way he's utilized players. Some people are complaining about, too many guys are getting regular rest. He doesn't like in Oakland, he didn't pinch hit for guys. The other day, he let Sandy Leon hit, and it actually worked. But what do you think about the way players are utilized?
Well, it's different, that's for sure. There's almost a little bit of occasional losing the battle to win the war. But I want to win every battle, you know, so that's it seems sometimes as soon as a guy gets hot, that is his predetermined day off. And you do wonder if that, has a chilling effect on some of these guys. But, like you said, it paid off with Leon the other night. It has paid off with a guy like Moreland, who wasn't in the lineup a lot. And all of a sudden, you got to keep him in the lineup. He's in there again tonight, hitting .305 now with a three-hit night last night. This was the Houston strategy last year, and it's how, you know, a handful of guys wound up being really important for the Astros last year on the way to the World Series. And listen, if you did this with any team, there'd be some people who would question it. But in the case of the Red Sox, you know, you brought in a new manager because you won 93 games and finished first two straight years and lost in October. So how are you going to argue with a guy who says, listen, this might not look great in April, but it's going to help us in October? That's what he's here to do, is to win in October. So you kind of have to give him the pass and let him go ahead with his strategy.
Sounded like Mookie Betts maybe could have played last night, but the weather was so awful. Probably not great for a hammy. Is he in there tonight?
He is not.
Wow.
But the word is he could be. Huh. So here's another, looking ahead at the schedule, right? You play tonight, and then it's a day game tomorrow. You got a day game after a night game. He's not going to play both. You're not going to come back from a hamstring injury and play a night game and then play again 12 hours later and then go sit on a plane and let everything tighten up as they go to Texas. So the decision was made to go against, I think it's Duffy tomorrow, and they just thought that was a better matchup. If he's only going to play one game, you might as well have him play the game tomorrow where They like him against the lefty. He could come in. I wouldn't be surprised to see him pinch hit tonight because he's ready to go. But they knew he couldn't play both, so they chose tomorrow.
Tom Caron, Red Sox Bruins insider at Nesson. We'll get to the Bs in a second. One more question on the Sox. More injury-related stuff. What's next for Dustin Pedroia, and how about Tyler Thornburg? Finally, maybe some good news for him.
Really good news last night for Thornburg. He struck out the side. He had three strikeouts in his first appearance with Pawtucket. He's back here at the clubhouse today and will pitch again tomorrow for the Paw Sox. I mean, this guy, you know, was an elite late-game reliever before they acquired him from Milwaukee. You know, and they, don't forget they gave up Travis Shaw, who's been pretty good. So this guy is going to be an important, you know, asset for them, along with Carson Smith, who's starting to look like his former self once again. So this bullpen should be getting better in the days to come. The Pedroia thing, and you know, I would temper that a little bit with the fact that it's Dustin Pedroia who thinks he should have been in the lineup opening day.
Yeah,
but he is progressing. You know, he is progressing. He's playing really limited fits and spurts in his extended spring. I mean, he's playing some games where he's going to take a half dozen at-bats and not even play the field. He's going to play some games where he's hitting 12 times and not running. I mean, they're doing all kinds of weird things just to get him in there and get him ramped up. I think I saw where he was picking Memorial Day weekend as when he thinks he could return to the big club. Alex Cora made a joke and said, how many days in May 31? He'll be here the 32nd. So he's trying to really temper it by not letting Dustin get caught up in a date and then pressuring himself. We'll see how it goes because it's essentially, you know, the first days of spring training for Dustin Pedroia.
Tom, let's head over to the black and gold. I mean, last night was kind of a meh performance. Really, the 6-2 win was kind of one, too. They got outshot, I think, by 12 shots and just piled it on, and Tampa's defense went away. But, I mean, I looked at that game last night. I said, that, you know, there's a couple of atrocious referees' calls, but at the end of the night, you couldn't really blame the refs. That was more about the Bruins just not playing that well last night.
No, yeah, I totally agree with that. I thought the officiating was horrible last night, but it's not why the Bruins lost.
Right.
The Bruins were not good last night. And for the first time, you know, in a little while here, I think it's really only happened like maybe one, you could say maybe two games of the Toronto series where they went back to the old, they just didn't come out looking like they were ready to play. And by the time they tried to get it going, Tampa was putting together a pretty good game plan there. And they still hung around, but not a great effort by them. I thought a lot of sloppy play. I thought, you know, that Tampa was more physical. Tampa was pushing the play more in the Bruins' end. And they just looked like the better team last night, without a doubt. And like you said, I'm not sure the Bruins, they certainly didn't look like they were 6-2 better in Game 1. I thought Tuukka was really good in Game 1, which was important after coming back an awful Game 7. And so I think Tuukka really gave them the chance to win. I thought he was the best player for them, even though they scored 6 goals. Early on, especially, Tuukka, when he had 2 skates on, was playing really well. And so, they come back home now. You knew anyone who thought they were going to just roll through this series wasn't really paying attention to what Tampa did during the regular season. I think it's going to be a battle. I still like the Bruins in this series, but they can't fall back into that trap. Remember the last 3 weeks of the season, all we talked about was how slow they would start these games, and they try to turn it on in the third period. You can't do that in the playoffs.
I think the thing that was so kind of perplexing to me was just the, as you said, the sloppy play, but the turnovers in their own end. I know Tuukka bailed them out at least one time. The third goal for Tampa came off a really careless turnover. That's something that Bruce Cassidy's got to be just livid about.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You got to have better protection of that puck. There are a couple times where they almost were just making blind passes off the wall. You know, they'd go win a battle on the wall and just kind of throw it out into open space. And there'd always be a Tampa Bay player there to swoop it up and create an odd man rush. You can't do that. I mean, you've got to just make the smart play. I think, you know, listen, you're never quite as good as you think you are when you're rolling. And this is a young team. You know, we did it. We talked about it in October, November nonstop, that you're going to see the mistakes along the way with a young team. Well, that's going to happen in the playoffs here, too. They're still a young team. They've still got a handful of guys there, 23 and younger, who are important parts of this this playoff run here. And they're going to make mistakes. I think that, you know, mistakes of aggression, I guess, would be, you know, they're trying to make a fancy play. They're trying to thread a perfect pass. They're trying to throw it out into space thinking someone will be there. And in the playoffs, you guys know, the first thing you got to do before you make good plays is not make mistakes. And there were a lot of mistakes last night.
TC, what did you think about the Pastrnak 4-minute penalty? I mean, obviously they didn't score on it, but it, you know, it's 4 minutes less time at a crucial moment in the third period where the Bruins have a chance really to score, especially when the fact that, you know, Pastrnak's stick never touched the Lightning player.
Yeah.
And shouldn't there be a replay for that or just...
Yeah, there really should. I mean, thank you. I mean, you're going to rewind video to see if a guy entered the zone offsides 40 seconds before a goal. But you can't take a moment to see if the guy slapped himself in the face with his own stick. It's just, it was ridiculous to me. And you know, he goes down like he's been shot. And I'm sure legitimately it hurt because he got a stick in the face. It was his own stick. And, coaches talk about that all the time. Power plays aren't just about, you know, the fact that they didn't score. It's about, as you said, 4 minutes off the clock, 4 minutes closer to the end of the game. 4 minutes where your best players are burning up energy, just running around trying to hold off a dear life and keep you in the game. At that point, you want to be attacking, not defending, and you have to defend for the better part of 4 minutes because of a call that should never have been made. In this day and age, I just don't understand how a call like that can be held up.
Bruins tied in their series 1-1. Game 3 is Wednesday. He's Tom Karen of Nesson, joins us every week at this time. TC, we appreciate it, and we'll make sure to slip our intern's number your way.
Yeah, I want to know if you guys are going to Europe to do the show. I mean, don't you need to be with the intern? I think that's
well,
fair.
Okay.
The intern is on summer vacation, so he won't be the intern then, but if they're going to give us the free room, we'll do the huddle from Europe.
Sure.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, but maybe you're at the Burger Bar on Tuesday nights. You might as well go to Europe. You can just hang out with my kid, and I'll stop calling in. He can do this instead of me from now on. It'll be perfect.
And once the kid makes his first $10 million, we can all go to Europe together on him.
Yeah, let's. How about 10? How about his first 10 before we get to the $10 million? All right, let's go with that.
TC, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, there he goes, Tom Karen of Nesson. When we come back, we bring Arnie back into the fold, and it's gone but not forgotten. Thanks to our friends at Elmwood Manier Funeral Home and Cremations. That's next on The Huddle.
It's Tuesday, which means it's time for Gone But Not Forgotten. Brought to you by Elmwood Manier Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington.
All right, gone but not forgotten. Thanks to our friends over at Elmwood Manier Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington. Remember now, a family's love is forever. Feel free to contact them 24/7. Elmwood Manier even has affordable options for your pets. Also, sports theme burials. Our friends over at Elmwood Manier. No good deaths today. No good funny deaths today. I got a
funny
deaths. No famous. Nothing really that caught my attention. So I'm going to go to the sports world. You disagree. Well, I can't wait to hear who you've got. But I'll give you two deaths, and it didn't take very long, and they're both in the NBA, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers and the Pelicans. Pelicans have about a much chance of beating Golden State as me dating supermodels, and the 76ers are already eliminated. Two gone. They've died, and they will be forgotten. Philadelphia and New Orleans, thank you. You're already eliminated from the NBA playoff race, Rich.
Wow, 1-0 Boston.
Yeah,
you're gone.
Done. Dead.
I couldn't disagree.
What do you got, Rich?
I hope you're right. How can you say nobody famous died today? Bebe, I guess it is, in 1997. Flipper.
What?
Flipper the Dolphin.
Flipper the Dolphin died?
On this day in 1997 at the age of 40, it doesn't get any more famous than that.
Is there more than one famous dolphin?
The Miami Dolphin.
Well, Dan Marino was pretty... No, I think that's about
it. Just Flipper, that's pretty much it.
No, but you remember...
You'd think there'd be a second one, I guess not.
Wasn't there... Yeah, I mean, you could kind of... Wouldn't it be pretty easy to replace him on the show?
Well, there's a lot of dogs. You had Lassie, Rin Tin Tin. I mean, there's been a lot of dogs that have made it. You know, the one Air Bud. A lot of them have been famous.
Beethoven.
Beethoven, come on. But just one dolphin? I don't understand.
Well... Rest his soul.
Rest in peace.
Soul. Flipper the Dolphin. Dead at the age of 40 on this day in 97.
Oh, jeez. Is that old or young, by the way?
For a dolphin? Really? Yeah. I have no idea.
It feels old. Well,
yes, it does feel old.
Feels like a full life. Gone but not forgotten, Corey Seager, the Dodgers star shortstop, out for the year. Tommy John surgery. And I feel bad because he's Kyle Seager, my boy, with the Mariners brother.
That's right. Thanks to our friends over at Edmund Wynier Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington. Remember now, family's love is forever. Feel free to contact them 24/7, especially for your pets or even sports theme burials. 1 hour in, Brady's going to have a Sports Center update. Were the Patriots, you're going to like this. Tom Brady speaks with Jim Gray. Wait till you hear what he's got to say. We got that coming up next. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The commercials are over and the guys are back. The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You are in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. We're all here. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie in Los Angeles. Hour two of the show. A Town Fair Tire text line if you want to get in. 802-655-6672. Brian in Richmond said, gone but not forgotten, winter. Huh. Yes, thank goodness for that.
Really, Brian? Are you seriously saying that? There was an inch of snow in my front yard yesterday morning.
Wow. And this may be the mistake of the day. If it isn't, we may have to just consider it. Shane in Burlington said, Snowflake is the dolphin from Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Oh, that's so right. Now, wasn't he the dolphin's mascot and somehow Dan Marino got mixed in
that?
I don't know.
Dave from Essex just called in and said Flipper was the dolphin's mascot in the 80s and would do flips in the East End Zone.
Oh, okay. Is that the person you were talking to while doing seven other things at the same time?
Yes, Arnie, you'll be very impressed. We got a call as I brought us back into the show, so I was talking and telling you to go at the same time.
I love it. So, you know what? We may have to give Shane in Burlington the mistake of the day if that holds up there with Snowflake.
It's funny because people think there's like seven people answering. There's like this group of people that are lined up answering our phones.
Yeah, that group
that's
of people
interns.
Is me. We have a full slate of interns for the summer. Our college interns are gone now because they're about to leave and go back home for the summer. So we're in a one-month lull here, Arnie, until we get our new crop of interns.
Are they good interns? That's all that matters. Are they good interns? Do they know what they're doing? Or do we have to sit them in the corner like baby and just leave them there? You tell me.
Nah, they're going to be great.
As long as they fetch you your Chinese food,
that's all you care about. That's all that matters. All right, Brady, start with the Burger Bar. You guys got some trivia tonight. Yeah.
Trivia tonight, Burger Bar and
like the way I read the sheet right there? That's the first thing you wrote. How about that?
I do. That's the first time in a year and a half of us doing the show as a threesome.
Well, you know, it's got to change.
That you finally read the show, so. Rich, 7:30 to 9:30, yeah. Burger Bar in Colchester. You know where it is. It's next to Dunkin' Donuts on one side, St. Mike's on the other, across from Fannie Allen.
Yep.
And we've had a really strong crowd there.
And the burgers. Man, there's a good reason the word burger is in the name of the place. Wow.
Half-price appetizers. So you want those mozzarella sticks. You want chicken wings. Half-price burgers. Or half-price appetizers, rather, and then great burgers, as you said. Yeah. Chicken sandwiches are phenomenal also.
And, Arnie, your wife is extremely – I'm not sure I've ever seen her so pumped up about the quality of her questions tonight.
She's
for trivia.
There was a group of five young ladies who went to St. Mike's who requested a certain topic. So I think she threw in a couple of questions of that also.
She did.
So we'll see how that works. Yeah, there you go.
So that'll be fun. They've got great drink specials as well. $2.50 for Coors Light and Miller Lite, $3 for Blue Moon. So it's fun. We're going to be watching all the games. The NHL playoffs are on. The NBA playoffs are on. We got the Red Sox game on. The Yankees are playing. Houston as well in a rematch in the ALCS. So come out and watch the games with us. Mistake of the day, you can get in, as always, 802-655-6672, and you can try to win that baseball cap, which is an exclusive. There's a limited number of those things around.
Yeah, they're 10.
They're all in my office, and people are coming in trying to steal them from me.
Brady, you wear yours all the time. So does Rich.
Yeah, I wear mine all the time. We were lucky to get a few, but the number that people can actually get is very, very limited. And so they're of high demand.
And it's great now because I can wear that instead of my 101.3 ESPN shirt because none of them fit me anymore because I've turned into such a cow. So now I can represent the station simply by putting a cap on my head.
And those caps are brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joann's Uniforms in Colchester, where they help small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. Arnie, you texted me at about 8 o'clock in the morning, Eastern time. So it was about 5 a.m. Pacific time. And you were pumped about Tom Brady speaking with Jim Gray yesterday.
Yeah, that I thought that's fantastic. I think it speaks volumes about what's going on in the Patriot organization, what Tom thinks about Belichick. And he didn't say a whole heck of a lot. It's what he didn't say that really had me going. It's the way he didn't say it. Oh, I just love – I mean, sometimes a picture's worth 1,000 words. Sometimes a two-word answer's worth just a great explanation. I don't know. I'll make that up. But it was phenomenal. I love this whole Tom Brady, Jim Gray thing.
Well, Tom Brady was out at the Milken Institute in California, and he was not, again, at phase two of the Patriots offseason. Season workouts, and I think that's part of the story that is getting omitted but shouldn't be. And Jim Gray, if you don't know, remember, a longtime reporter. He interviews Brady every week during the NFL season. So they have a relationship together.
And I'm surprised about that relationship because Jim Gray is known as a very hard-hitting guy who throws curveballs a lot. I mean, he's caught a lot of people off guard.
The Pete Rose All-Star debacle. Remember that? Yeah. Or when he interviewed Pete Rose in the All-Star game and asked him to come clean. Now? Come clean now, you knucklehead?
Well, Here was Brady. Here's the question from Jim Gray and Brady's answer. This is one of the interesting things you're referring to, Arnie.
Do you feel appreciated by them, and do they have the appropriate gratitude for what you have achieved?
I plead the fifth. Look, man, that is a tough question. Yeah, I mean,
Your wife seems to indicate. Yeah.
I think everybody in general wants to be appreciated more at work.
And there you go, Arnie.
I think everybody wants to be a little bit more appreciated at work. Okay. That's him saying, I want to be appreciated. No, believe me, that says volumes. Stop it. And by the way, you should get in the Town Fair Tire text line. Every Patriot fan that just heard that should have a comment. You could read between the lines. He's not a happy camper. That's like saying, that's like me saying, Rich, I'm going to fix you up on a date. And you said, well, what does she look like? She looks like great personality. Great personality, Rich. That all I said was two words: great personality. And you already laughed, and you got the you were laughing there because you know what I'm saying. And all I said it was in two words. Sometimes two words. Say all I said was I plead the fifth. And that speaks volumes. Just like great personality, Rich. You could know. We already knew something was wrong. This just confirms that his relationship is icy, that he doesn't get a lot of love like he should. His wife even said that. So I don't know why we're questioning it. That's exactly what's going on here.
Actually, I was laughing because I was chuckling over the concept of going on a date. But that's beside the point. You know what? The thing, what is he going to be next year? 41? Do you feel appreciated? And you know what my answer is going to be here. Just go out and throw 34 touchdowns and 4 interceptions and do what you always do. And I don't know about Tom Brady's situation with anybody in the front office, but we sure appreciate him.
Yeah, and Rich, and both of you, actually, there's more coming out of that conversation with Jim Gray. Here was kind of the next leg of questioning.
Are you happy?
I have my moments. I do.
Are you happy with the people you work with and for?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. You've been on the same team for a long time. You've had relationships for a long time. They, ebb and flow like every relationship, but there's no people I'd rather play for or be committed to than the team that I've been with.
And there you go. So that, I think, Arnie, I think that takes the sting for Patriot fans out of quote number one, doesn't it?
You know, again, aren't you just trying to make up for a little bit now at this point? Aren't you trying to make things a little bit easier for yourself? When things didn't go better, you feel a little uncomfortable? Or no, am I misreading that, guys? What do you think?
I thought the answer to that second question, too, was sort of, I thought it was somewhat like the first. The difference in that second answer was that he immediately resorted to, the Brady speak there, just saying, I love my teammates and I love everything about the experience. But I think there is something to be said for his first two comments and both answers to those questions, but I don't think it's as much as I think a lot of people want it to be.
I'll say this. I feel the exact same way I felt pretty much from the start. I do believe that there is friction in the organization, maybe between Belichick and Kraft, and then downwards between Belichick and Brady. However, I have thought all along that those two can coexist. They are both professional enough and driven enough that they want to win Super Bowls that they can coexist together. I do believe, as Brady said also later, that he believes Belichick is not easy to play for. He does believe that he's not appreciated enough, but I think that they can coexist. I still think the bigger story here is Brady's relationship with Giselle, I think, is more of the issue than his relationship with Belichick and her desire to get him to retire. And also that, again, here was Brady willingly, the guy who's all about football, choosing to stay away from now phase two of the offseason workouts. I think that, Arnie and Rich, is a bigger story than what he said.
I got to say one thing about Giselle, because you bring her up, and obviously she's part of this because she was in the time versus Tom, and we all know where she stands. Give her a little bit more credit. I don't think she's going to push Tom to retirement like everybody thinks he's. Sure, she wants him to retire, but she knows better that his time is coming to an end, and the last thing you want to do is push a guy out the door, push him on the banana peel, because he'll resent you for the rest of his life. I think she knows better than that. Give her a little bit more credit than that, guys.
Yeah, and as far as Giselle went, he was kind of light with his answer. He said, well, I've managed to negotiate for the last 2 years with Giselle, and everybody laughed. I mean, I'm sure it was a very safe audience that probably spent a fortune to get in there to see him. So, I think it was probably a surrounding that he very much controlled, and he was able to have some fun with it. But you know what? It was brought up, and to use the word negotiate when you're talking about your wife, I thought was kind of interesting.
Well, and here is what he said, Rich. This is the quote that you are talking about here, with him talking about Giselle and the future of his career.
I've talked 2 years with my wife. I've negotiated that thus far. I still got a little further to go. But, she's I have a great wife and great partner in life. And, she's a mom, and she sees me, and she wants to protect me. And football's a violent sport. I mean, guys, every day is, I'm retiring because of this and that, and you see people injured. And, she has two boys, so she's doesn't want those boys to get injured and play football. It's hard for them. It's hard for my parents to sit up there and watch me, take hits.
So, yes, she wants him to be done playing. It's the exact same thing I've thought altogether.
I I'm not going to say Giselle's shallow or anything, but she married Tom Brady, not because he was Tom Brady the accountant, all right? Not because he was Tom Brady the librarian, because he was obviously he's a good-looking guy, but because he was Tom Brady, the quarterback of the New England Patriots, okay? So that's one of the reasons why she probably, of course, maybe sense of humor, good looking, whatever. But, that's why she married him. Now you think she wants to force him out? She can wait the 2 or 3 years. I don't think she's in that much of a hurry. And by the way, how much is Tom really getting hit? And obviously he gets a little bit more than usual, but he's not getting hit all that much. They protect him real damn good up there in New England, no doubt.
Do you guys think the recent situation with being compared to Yoko Ono bothers Giselle and makes her, that would kind of concern me if I'm her.
I think it would bother Brady more so than her. That's what I think.
Yeah, I thought about that. I was like, geez, I hope she didn't see that.
Well, he's protective of his family, so I have, and protective of his image and his standing, so I believe he would be upset about it. But no, I don't think she's Yoko Ono, but I've thought all along, he can coexist with Belichick even in a strained work relationship. He's got a great buffer there between his teammates and Josh McDaniels, who he apparently has a great relationship. And ultimately, he's got Kraft's support, so that's going to trump everything. If it ever needed to come to a push-come-to-shove situation, he's got the trump card because he's got Robert Kraft. What you can't easily navigate all the time is the person you go home to every day needling at you about when you're going to retire. I still think that that is the bigger thing than him and Belichick.
If they think that 2 years it's a done deal, definite, because he negotiated 2 more years, that's all a joke. You understand that, don't you? That's all part of what's going on here. This guy could play 43, 44, 45. Who the hell knows when he's going to retire? He loves playing so much. I've never seen such a thing. It's absolutely crazy. Have you ever seen a guy just hang on so long like that? It's nuts. Back in the day they did because they wanted the money. He doesn't need the money like this. It's crazy out there.
Well, the thing is he wants to keep going because, let's face it, he's had a lot of success and it doesn't seem to be going away. I mean, he's a unique situation where, you look at some guys who played, Warren Moon started fading quite a bit. Vinny Testaverde, obviously, when he hit 40. I mean, if you look at the guys who played quarterback at 40, they were already on the bench or just ineffective.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, he's never had a situation where he was mediocre. So, you know, and I hate to say if that's how us Pats fans sort of look at it as well, why wouldn't you want Brady back? Why wouldn't he want to come back?
Exactly.
Why wouldn't Giselle want him to come back? Because there's no sign of slowing down.
You're going to turn on him so fast the minute that they're nine games in and they're 4-5 and he's got a 13-17 touchdown interception. You're going to turn so fast on him.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Eventually, the question is, will Tom Brady let it happen? Because he may get out before he gets to that point. He'll know when it's time.
Arnie, Jake, and go ahead.
Well, I don't think any – can you I can only imagine what it's going to be like for Tom Brady losing. Can you imagine how harsh he's going to be with the media? He's never had to go through something like that.
It's going to be a whole new world for all of us. And speaking of Brady again, Jake in Williston wants to give Tom Brady the mistake of the day. He goes, I can't stand the expression plead the fifth. That portion of the amendment specifically provides a level of protection against incriminating yourself in court. It doesn't exist in day-to-day life. It's so annoying. So that's our resident lawyer, Jake Wilson.
The guys who write 57 letters to the editor every single month.
First time texter, have you guys discussed the Baker Mayfield interest on part of the Patriots, apparently interested in the number two pick? No, we're going to get to that coming up also. That was some real interesting news after what I had to say yesterday, because I thought they didn't want to upset the apple cart. I guess that's not so true, so... That is funny about that. I can't wait to that. Brady, who is coming up next, though?
Well, we're going to go out to the phone line after the break and talk with Arpan Basu, and we'll talk about a really cool connection from Montreal to UVM. Arpan Basu of The Athletic in Montreal is coming up next.
All right, next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Step one, watch sports. Step two, talk about sports. Now, back to the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
Let's go! All right, welcome back. You're in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Also, always on the 101.3 ESPN app. Brady and Rich here in studio inside our Colchester studios. Arnie out in L.A. And Rich, we're going to go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and talk to somebody from your favorite place on earth. We're going to go out to Montreal and talk with Arpan Basu. He covers all things Montreal for The Athletic. Arpan, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Well, we appreciate you joining us. And let's start with this, because this is cool news here. A really cool link between the University of Vermont and the Montreal Canadiens. Tell us what's new with former Catamount. Rich, go ahead and say it.
Dominic Ducharme.
Tell us what's new with him.
Well, he's gotten his big break. You know, I mean, he's really diligently worked his way up to coaching ranks, and now was hired last week as Claude Julien's assistant coach. And so... it's really the break he's been looking for, and was a bit of a surprise. I think a lot of people assumed that he was going to be sort of a primary candidate to coach the Canadiens AHL team in Laval. But in my mind, I think he's made a better move getting straight to the NHL without bypassing the AHL entirely to get an assistant's job in Montreal, learn under, you know, one of the most accomplished head coaches in the league, in Claude Julien, and really... if he plays his cards right and hangs around long enough, could eventually take over for Claude Julien as head coach here. So a really great break in his career, well-deserved. I mean, he's coached, you know, the Canadian World Junior team a couple of times, had great success in Halifax when he was there, a bit less in Drummondville where he came from this time, but won a Memorial Cup in Halifax. And so he's really really done all he could do with the junior level. But the real coup here for him is skipping the American Hockey League entirely and going straight to the NHL. So it's big news for him.
And by the way, Brady, if he does replace Claude Julien down the line, you're going to have to learn how to say his
name. Yes, I am. So. Yes, I am.
But
was that what that was all about? Correct?
Yes. No, I didn't. I don't get some sort of thrill out of saying his name.
You just love everything Montreal. I was giving you a shot.
That's true, Arpan. You live in the right place. Trust me. And say I live there too.
Some days in February, I doubt that, but I seriously start doubting that. But yeah. Around this time of year, it starts to become that again.
I'll tell you, the draft coming up, they've got that third pick. I mean, I'm looking at their last 10 drafts, and the last time they had the third pick was really the only one so far. I mean, we'll see 5 years down the line here is Alex Galchenyuk, who they grabbed in 2012. But, man, how much pressure is on this team to get this one right?
Yeah, I mean, there is. I mean, it's they can't blow it in a certain sense, but because there is some, I guess, uncertainty surrounding that pick. I mean, the consensus guy that they should take seems to be Philip Zadina, who plays in Halifax and is just a really highly skilled scorer from the Czech Republic, and just seems like a bit of a slam dunk at that spot. But, you know, there is some variance in terms of, you know, there's a bunch of players kind of bunched together in those 3, 4, 5 slots. So they could kind of go away from that eventually and see how things develop over the next little while. But yeah, the pressure is huge, not only on that draft pick, their 4 second round picks. They have 8 picks in the top 102 picks in the draft. So, you know, they're really going to be replenishing their stock of prospects, which it needs right now. It's not a very deep pool that they have. So there's a lot of pressure on them for that because they haven't necessarily drafted all that well in the last little while. It hasn't been as catastrophic as some people are saying, but it hasn't been great. And but other than that, I mean, the pressure just overall on the front office to kind of turn this thing around this summer and make some changes to make them a competitive team in the fall, to go from, you know, 4th worst in the NHL into a playoff spot, is pretty palpable as well. You know, I mean, I think Jeff Molson, the owner of the team, kind of made it clear that, you know, he's going to keep Marc Bergevin and his people around, but there's a deadline on that. There's sort of a date that, you know, he's going to need to show some tangible changes to the team and make them competitive really quickly here. So the pressure is on him, not only on Marc Bergevin, not only for this draft, but for the entire offseason to show his owner that he deserves to stick around here and that he's able to ice a competitive team, which definitely wasn't the case this year.
Arpan Basu covers Montreal sports and the Canadiens, and we'll get to baseball in a moment, Rich, because I know you're geeked up about that at The Athletic here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We're talking a lot again about NHL expansion, and we've got Vegas being the success story and the prototype moving forward. Seattle, it looks like, is all set to get a team in the next few years. Quebec City has been a team, or been a city that is again linked to a possible NHL franchise. How would the Canadiens in particular respond to another team being in Quebec? Would you welcome it for the rivalry, or you dislike it because of just the opportunity that it takes money away?
Well, I think the Canadiens as an organization have been, Jeff Molson has been very vocal saying that he supports the NHL going back to Quebec City. That rivalry was good for business on both ends. And so it creates interest. It creates a regional sort of flavor to every game that they play in the regular season. So it creates buzz around those games, which is kind of lacking. The Canadiens, you know, their rivalry with the Bruins has kind of waned over the last little while. You know, most of the key characters from when it was kind of at its height a few years ago have gone. You know, P.K. Subban's not there, Milan Lucic, Alexi Emelin, Dale Weiss. There's all sorts of guys who are at the heart of that rivalry. They're not there anymore. So for the Canes to have a real natural rival, I think they would welcome. And I think it would also kind of keep them sharp in terms of scouting local talent and drafting local talent and making sure that part of their identity, you know, the old frying Frenchman identity, they're not really Frenchmen anymore. There's not that many guys from Quebec on the team. So having another team in Quebec, I think would create some competition for that talent, would maybe get the Canadiens on their toes a little bit in terms of making sure that they don't let anything slip through the cracks there. So on many levels, there are some other greater business issues at stake here. You know, the Canadiens would essentially be losing one of their television markets. But as far as all that's concerned, Jeff Molson has been very upfront in saying that he doesn't expect any compensation if Quebec City gets a team and that he openly supports it. So he's been really good on that front, and it's kind of understandable because Jeff Molson grew up during the height of the Battle of Quebec in the 80s. So, I mean, that was a time when he was a younger man and a kid, really, and watched that unfold. So it's only natural that now, as a grown man and who's the owner of the team, would want something like that to be rekindled just because it captured the imagination of, like, basically an entire generation of Quebecers. So that's never a bad thing when you're trying to create fans and keep fans, especially in the context that we're seeing now where the team sort of, you know, people lost interest in the team halfway through this season when they saw they just couldn't compete. So having any way to add interest to his business, I think, is welcomed by Jeff Molson.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to explain to younger people how intense that rivalry was. Everybody says, you know, the Nordique, that was you had the Stastnys and, you know, what else? So they were a very good team. And those guys, it was a bloodbath every time those teams played.
Oh, you just tell the younger people to just Google
you know, Good Friday, Canadiens Nordiques. Just check that out on YouTube, and you'll see exactly what that was about. It was vicious. It was a vicious rivalry, and heated. And the best part about that, you know, I wasn't a reporter back then, but back then it became like this sort of mini competition. Like, the media didn't really like each other of the respective teams. The PR departments would try to one up in each other in terms of the media meal at either building. Like, the rivalry went like right down the line. So that's something that I think would be that there's something that was lost when the Nordiques left, in terms of like kind of the Canadiens' mystique and part of what makes them such an attraction. So to get that back, I think would help.
I can only imagine what Twitter would have been like if the Nordiques had been around. Imagine the Twitter battles. We're talking with Arpit Basu, writer at The Athletic in Montreal. And Arpit, I was reading your work last week. I want to say it was Friday, and it was about a really good situation for the idea of baseball coming back to Montreal at the major league level. Kind of tell us where we're at now in the process and why it's good news.
Well, basically, you know, when these games started being played here, these Blue Jays exhibition games, you know, two of them before the beginning of the season, and just, you know, to see like the fervor with which fans came, it came shortly after the death of Gary Carter, so that there had been some kind of rekindling of nostalgia for the Expos because of that. Warren Cromartie, shortly after that, started his sort of grassroots campaign to get the Expos back. Then these games started getting played. And then, shortly after that, you know, Stephen Brofman and a group of investors that he'd gathered sort of started doing some groundwork to get the Expos back. And so there was some buzz, and people were excited. And back in 2013, they did some market research to see what would be necessary, what kind of money is available, what kind of a fan base would be available, all the things that Major League Baseball would want to know about the market. Then a lot of time passed, and these games are still being played at the Olympic Stadium, but the buzz about the return of the Canadiens had kind of started to go down. There wasn't anything tangible to really report in terms of news. So what happened last week was actually a very relatively minor piece of news. You know, the Brofman group sort of announced that they were going to be running these focus groups to see what exactly they would need to have in a potential new stadium to satisfy the fan base, the clientele. And with that information, they can finalize the actual cost of what a stadium would need in terms of funds. And it sounds, you know, it sounds like nothing, but it's really, it required investment to do these focus groups. And so you got to understand, these people are working with no guarantee whatsoever that they're going to get a team, so that they're investing in the project. They've enlisted a company who's helped, I think there's 23 of the 30 major league ballparks right now have received some sort of logistical help from this company. It's what they do. They specialize in it. They're called CSL. And so they're a group that's very familiar with the way Major League Baseball works, with the way stadium financing works. And so it just, the whole thing, after kind of drifting out of the imagination of people, suddenly became somewhat more real all of a sudden. Like, this is actually something tangible that's happening. And not only that, but the other piece of news out of that is that there is a meeting plan between Rob Manfred and the Brofman group later this summer, where they're going to present the information, the data they collected from these focus groups, and will, in all likelihood, present a final cost for the stadium, because it'll all be finalized, because they're going to take the data, they're going to work with the architects they've retained, and that's the last piece of information they need to nail down the actual cost of their stadium, which they've been very tight-lipped about in terms of what it's going to look like, where it's going to be, what it's going to cost, how much public money they're going to need. But all those things should become more concrete after they do these focus groups, and they're going to take that information and take it to Major League Baseball and see where they stand. So, you know, just a little thing is all it takes, I think, to keep this project in the public eye and in the public imagination. And every new piece of information that they can get and they can bring to Major League Baseball is a good thing. And so, you know, it's not clear how exactly they will get a team right now. It's, you know, the situation in Oakland and the situation in Tampa, neither of which are resolved, but both of them have sort of paths to a solution for their stadium issues. And Rob Manfred's been clear, they're not going to do any expansion until those two situations are resolved, because if one of them were to fall through, he would want to use the potential expansion cities as potential relocation cities, which would be the quickest way for Montreal to get a team. And a few other cities, you know, San Antonio, Portland, there's some other cities who are looking to get a major league team, but that would be the fastest route. But if those two situations get resolved, that it would be an expansion situation, but they're just trying to make sure, and the focus groups is part of that, they're trying to make sure that they have every little detail of their plan in place for the moment when Rob Manfred announces that either they're going to expand or they're going to relocate another team to Montreal. This group wants to be ready, and this is just one part of it. So, you know, when you hear the words focus group and you hear, like, corporation and this and that, it just doesn't sound very baseball-like, but it actually is something tangible that this group is doing to get baseball back, and I think that's good news.
Well, we're very excited because we're going to combine that idea with an idea we already had on this show a year ago, and Arnie said it, but I'm going to take credit for it here. So we'll get Major League Baseball back in Montreal, and we'll flood the market from Burlington, only an hour and a half away, in northern New York on the other side of Lake Champlain, and in turn, we'll get a Canadian Football League team here in Burlington. We'll be the 10th team in the CFL, and you guys come and flood the market. We'll help out each other's economy.
Yeah, as soon as they fill the stadium here, they'll flood that market, yeah. So it'll be all good.
So, Arpit Basu, writer at The Athletic, covers Montreal sports. And Arpit, we just subscribed to The Athletic about a month ago. We're using the site religiously. We love it, and there's always a deal, so people can go over on theathletic.com if they want to see some really great stuff. We're loving it.
Well, great. Thanks. I appreciate that very much. And yeah, I mean, there's not only Montreal, but we have, you know, we're in like 23 cities in Canada and the United States to cover all the major sports. So yeah, it's definitely, in terms of bang for your buck, in terms of subscriber services, I think we have a pretty good deal.
Arpit, thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thanks, Arpit.
You got me flustered. I can't believe you told him I didn't know how to say that name. Really?
You're going to need to know how to say that.
He didn't have any idea that I didn't know how to say that.
Exposed your fault. It's about time, since Arnie usually does that.
Dominique Ducharme.
Yeah, he was a star here.
Well, he played back with Martin St. Louis for two years.
A couple of years, yeah.
And the thing that makes Dominique Ducharme so great is that... So we talked about him getting the job with the Canadiens, being the lead assistant to Claude Julien. He is one of the hottest up-and-coming bilingual head coaches, head coaching candidates in the NHL, and you know as well as I do, if you're going to be in Montreal, it is a prerequisite. Yes. You have to be bilingual.
Well, but you have to certainly be French.
Yeah. That would make him a desirable candidate to a lot of markets as well, but just not only the ability to communicate with players, investors, sponsors, but, I mean, just the team personnel.
Right. It's so funny as a Bruins lifer and all those years with Claude Julien. You watch the post-game interviews now with Julien, and half the questions are in French and half are in English. And all of a sudden, he just changes his language into French. It's like, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, that's right. His name is Claude Julien. Pretty good chance he knows how to speak French.
That was like a Serge Ibaka of the Raptors answered three consecutive questions in three different languages. He asked English, French, and Spanish.
Now, that's a trick.
In a press conference. So that was Arpit Basu of The Athletic. Richie, you feeling more excited about baseball in Montreal?
It feels like the Cirque a little bit to me. I'll believe it when I see it. But, yeah, I'm not real excited about an expansion team. But you know what? Damn, hell, let's get one up there. Who cares? You know, I don't care who goes there. There was some talk for a while about Tampa going. And can you imagine having 19 games, because Tampa's in the AL East, against Boston, the Yankees, and Toronto?
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get a ticket for a game up there. It'd be a complete opposite of the Big O experience.
If I were Montreal, I'd want a new team, not somebody's relocated team. Because I know the pain of having my team relocated. I wouldn't want to do that to some 10-year-old kid who, I know people don't flood Rays games, and I know they're getting $10,000 a game, and I know that's pathetic from a business standpoint, but I couldn't stand myself if I were the fan rooting for some 10-year-old kid who does love the Rays, and it's a thrill of his lifetime to go to those games, him losing his team. Right. I couldn't do that.
I still could barely bring myself to be happy the Carolina Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup years ago as a Whalers lifer. So, you know, well, it doesn't take much to be a Whalers lifer. They only lasted, a decade and a half?
Coming up on Champlain Valley Game Night, we'll talk with David Schultz out of 103.7 in Lafayette, Louisiana. We'll talk about the Patriots' newest quarterback. Well, we don't know if he'll make the team, but we'll talk about the Patriots' draft pick they took in the 7th round. So we'll talk about that on Champlain Valley Game Night. But coming up next, Baker Mayfield. Was he almost the Patriots quarterback of the future? We'll bring Arnie back into the conversation. That's next on The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
Phone lines are now open. Get ready to call in at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here, 103 ESPN. Great interview, guys. Good. I like that, man. I like that. We're going to have to start breaking out the old Expo gear and stuff. You know what I mean? By the way, the old Expos jerseys are phenomenal. I love. I used to think it was an M that was on the cap. You know what I mean, Brady?
Yes, it's an E.
Yes, and, but it looked like an M.
And remember, right behind where you sit in this studio, we have the Vermont Expos powder blue jersey.
Yes, the replica
that we got from the Lake Monsters last year. So did you like? Could you believe that Rich threw me under the bus? Because so we're talking with Arpan Basu, who we just got off the phone with.
I heard what he said. And yeah, I would have thrown you under the bus also.
Wow.
Yeah, he gets really
Dominic Ducharme. I mean, how do you not know that name?
Because I'm not a hockey. I wasn't a UVM fan in 1993.
But you know how to read, don't you?
The first time I said it, I said Dominic Ducharme. That was the very first
time. Yes, you did. And I didn't say anything until a while after.
He waited until the perfect moment to throw me under the bus, not only to the listeners, but to the media as well. Now that guy's going to be like, great, I'm not coming on with that yo-yo again.
That's what he's going to think. Yeah.
All right, get to the Patriot possible trade that was going on. And we have a pretty good source about that one, do we not, or what?
I'll say his agent.
Baker Mayfield's agent says the Pats almost traded up to number two to take him. Basically, if Baker Mayfield did not go number one to Cleveland, the Patriots were very, very interested in moving up to try to get him at two because they thought the Jets were going to get him at three if they didn't get into at
wow.
two.
You know, first thing is, I wonder what it would have taken to move up to number two. What, the two first-round picks and the two second-round picks? Boy, that would have been awesome. A king's ransom, exactly what I was talking about before the draft. The one thing we're probably wrong, myself included, because if the Patriots thought that Baker Mayfield is the better quarterback, Cleveland thinks Baker Mayfield's the better quarterback, I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. You guys have known I've always said Darnold and Rosen. I've been saying it for the better part of a year now. So, I don't know. Are we wrong on that? Am I wrong on this? Is Baker Mayfield the better quarterback if the Patriots wanted to trade up and get him if he was available over somebody like Darnold and Rosen? Maybe I'm missing something here.
And he was sort of a late surge, wasn't he? I mean, I always heard of Mayfield sort of as that floating kind of number 12-ish pick up until about 2 weeks before the draft. Then he started heading into the top five. And then the day before the draft, everybody said he's going number one. It just sort of came out of nowhere. What happened in those last 2 weeks?
Well, the completion percentage, that was something, the accuracy, as we always talk about, that's what hindered Josh Allen. So the accuracy was there. And also, the closer we got to the draft, the behavioral concerns started to really, really dissipate. We started to hear less about his antics and more about him, the football player. And that's where people really started to be enamored with him. And Brent Sobleski of Bleacher Report told us on Friday he thought he was the best quarterback in the draft. Pro Football Focus said he was the best quarterback in the draft. So now all these analytics people are out saying he's the best. And Arnie, I really think it just comes down to, do you trust him to give you the right image on and off the field?
No, you know who I don't trust is Belichick. We're burying the lead here, though. Here's the lead, okay? I always said this, that Baker Mayfield, I think the deciding factor for the Browns to take him is that Baker Mayfield is 23 and Sam Darnold is 20. Had the Patriots been taken Baker Mayfield at that number two pick or whatever, what would that said about Tom Brady? Because to me it would have shown that we're going to force Tom Brady out because you think a 23-year-old Baker Mayfield, he'll wait 1 year. I don't think he's going to wait a second year, and he's certainly in the hell not going to wait 3 years to play quarterback for the Patriots. So I think Belichick would have been – I think he liked that this got out and said, you know what, Tom? I was going to force you out after 1 year had we drafted Baker Mayfield.
You could kind of look at it that way for Garoppolo, but the difference here is that Garoppolo wasn't a number one pick. I mean,
it makes
a huge difference. He was a third rounder,
I think. And he's not trading up for the second pick overall.
Right.
And you trade up for the second pick, Tom Brady would have been furious.
Right. No, that's a good point. And I'll tell you, as a Pats fan, thank you, Cleveland. Thank you. I would have never done that. Given up all those picks to get a guy that isn't going to throw a pass for 2 years at least.
You know what would have happened is you wouldn't have forced Tom Brady into retirement. What you would have done is you would have forced Tom Brady to go to another football team so you could play Baker Mayfield.
And Arnie, Jake in Williston, who also in addition to being our resident lawyer, is also our resident analytics guy. He says Mayfield, it's not really not even close. Mayfield has the highest completion percentage of anyone on passes 20 yards or fewer. 95% of passes travel 20 yards or fewer.
Yeah, but that's not fair because they, you know, the offense that they run in the Big 12, a lot of them are very short passes, a lot of dumps. You get percentage, you get a completion for just flipping it to the running back, and the defenses are really bad in the Big 12. I don't know if that's a fair assessment.
No, but it certainly shows you why the Patriots were ready to empty their bank, empty their vault to get a guy like that who has that kind of success in a short passing game, which is what the Patriots live for.
Not if he's not going to play for 3 years, though. You're going to keep the number two pick overall on the bench for 3 years, for 2 years? No, and no. They would afford Tom Brady out of New England. That's what would have happened.
Rather than just think about, Arnie, what the Patriots look like if this had happened, I just think about what the draft as a whole looks like. Because if Cleveland doesn't take Mayfield, just say they take any other quarterback, then the Patriots trade up and they take Mayfield.
Right.
Well, then the Jets still get a quarterback.
Right,
and then,
Sam Darnold.
And then the Browns take Saquon Barkley at four?
No, wait. Sam Darnold would have been the number one pick.
Fine, so Darnold's one. Mayfield goes two to the Patriots. Then the Jets come in at three and take Rosen or Allen. And then at four, the Barkley goes to the Browns again. And
yes.
Very, very interesting as to what it could have been.
Yes, exactly. Had the Browns not traded that pick away, which, you know, there was consideration for doing that also, but I'm assuming they would have kept that also. So, but we probably would have turned out better for the Browns.
You guys surprised Jack Mills? His agent came right out and just said, by the way, the Patriots called.
Jim in Essex on the Tough Air Tire on Texas said, guys, consider the source. Why are you talking about it like it was real? That was a real source, Brady.
That's what I'm saying.
It's not fake news, guys, right?
No, I'm always the one complaining about all these people just throwing ideas against the wall to see what sticks. This is Mayfield's agent we're talking about, and I heard him say it, and it's like, well, he must know. He's his agent.
And he didn't have to say – I mean, he didn't have to name the team.
No.
He could have said another team was interested. He could
have
said –
shouldn't have named the team,
Yeah, he probably shouldn't have named the team. And now if I were the Patriots, I'd be a little lukewarm about maybe wanting to do business with him in the future. I think you're right. That's a big no-no in agenting world.
If I was Tom Brady at the dinner table, you know what I'd be saying to Giselle? Can you believe these guys wanted to trade up for the number two pick overall for my replacement? What, are they trying to push me out? I'd be so upset. It's not even funny. But Rich, give me a good 60 seconds on what happened to your Bruins in that 4-2 loss, my friend.
Well, they just didn't play well. They didn't play that real well, considering they won the first game 6-2. They got outplayed much of that game, but they got on a roll in the second half of the game and won. But I mean,
the first 10 minutes was like 7-0 in shots.
It was 10-0 before the Bruins finally got a shot. And then the next thing you look down and it's like 11-8. So they stormed the net for a little while. They did get a goal, but that game last night felt like it reminded me a little bit of game 6 in the Celtics Milwaukee series last week, where the Celtics just said, all right, we've got home ice here. But the Bruins went out there for a split. And that's exactly the way they played last night.
Well, too many turnovers, Rich. And also, I went back and I watched the highlights again to just see how many close chances there were. You had Pasternak who hit the post in the first.
Behind the goal. Yeah, I mean, it went from post to post.
I mean, you had that in the first period. You had David Backes had a great look in the second period where he got stonewalled. DeBrusque had a chance in the third. You had the slash that wasn't called on Marchand going in the third period when the game at that point I think was still 2-1. So there were a lot of close calls yesterday.
And
the McAvoy goal was fantastic.
It was a beautiful. Bing, bang, boom in the net. But and don't forget that 5-on-3 they had.
Yes.
I mean, they had – but the turnovers, you're right. I mean, how many grade-A chances are you going to give a team with that kind of offensive output?
Unbelievable. But one game apiece. We knew it wasn't going to be easy, and this one's probably going to end up going 7. Last story standing. It's a good one that's coming up next. It's a quick show today. You're in the huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
It's time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, first, Brady, you want to get to the mistake of the day? Do we have the qualifier? How about the one?
Shane in Burlington.
Oh, that's right. Shane in Burlington.
Yes, Shane in Burlington.
In other words, he has no idea what he said.
Shane in Burlington is the qualifier for that mistake of the day. And again, if you win the mistake of the day for the week, you get that 101.3 ESPN baseball cap thanks to Joann's Embroidery in Colchester. Embroidery works at Joann's Uniforms.
There you go. Congratulations to Derek Fisher. Because him and his girlfriend, Gloria Govan, who, by the way, used to be married to Matt Barnes. Remember when Derek Fisher and Matt Barnes got into it? Remember when they got the whole fight? Well, Derek Fisher is now gotten engaged to Gloria Govan. And by the way, if you look at the size of the ring on her finger, it is 7.5 carat diamond ring. Usually goes north of $1 million. They're not sure what Derek Fisher paid for the ring. They've been dating since 2015. No comment from Matt Barnes as of yet.
I'm guessing he won't be one of the invited.
I don't know. I don't know that. I can't guarantee that, Rich. I can't guarantee that.
Maybe he'll. Maybe Derek Fisher will have all the groomsmen wear Matt Barnes jerseys.
Yes, that'd be great.
Like what'd you think? What'd you think of Terry Rozier yesterday wearing the Drew Bledsoe jersey?
I love that.
The throwback, the old ones.
Yes.
Hey, by the way, I want to see a packed house at trivia tonight. I'll be out there hosting at the Burger Bar. We're going to get started in about an hour and a half, so I'm going to head down there now and have myself a burger and get ready to go.
All right, awesome. Have fun at the Burger Bar. Brady, what's coming up on the Champaign Valley game?
We'll talk with David Schultz of 103.7 The Game in Lafayette, Louisiana. We'll be talking about Danny Etling, new quarterback for the Patriots out of LSU.
All right, for Brady and for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champaign Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.